Welcome to the LTW Fancast with me, Jess Bunyard.
And me, Jacob Basford.
Hello, we are approaching Christmas. I'm so excited. We're recording now as it stands, and for me, at least, it's the last week of term, last week of semester. I've got a couple of seminars left to teach, some assessments to mark. But Jacob, you are fresh off the back of finishing Macbeth, the Scottish play. How did that go? And tell us about the celebrations that happened after as well.
Hi Jess, love to see you again. Yes, so Friday night, Saturday night, and last night we're recording this section of the podcast on Monday. I was performing as Banquo in Macbeth at the Shakespeare Society, University of York. It went very, very, very well. Great success. Apart from the fact that on the Friday night, also I'm playing Banquo and the character gets murdered on stage, and we have a brilliant fight choreographer. And it looked really cool, like, fake punches. I had this massive sword. It looked incredible. And you're supposed to, basically, I'm supposed to die on stage, and the blood pack is supposed to burst, so it looks like I'm bleeding. And on the first night, it just didn't burst. And I was trying to, it looked like I was rubbing my tummy, basically. It looked really odd, me trying to, like, burst this blood pack. And in the end, I sort of just, sort of, like, staggered off stage. So that was quite funny. So I got a jokey award for that last night at the after party, because that was basically what we were getting up to. We were giving each other silly awards, getting very silly drunk, and now I'm very sillily hangover. And I think for perhaps legal reasons, that's probably all that I can say. No, all seriousness, it was a really good show. Great people, great cast. A shout out to the University of York Shakespeare Society, and yeah, but no, ready for this episode. We're now episode 5, which is incredible, and yeah, reviewing a difficult loss against Ealing from the weekend, but we're gonna go into that, and gonna go into some more news, some more player profiles. We've still got another bumper episode for you guys. And but yeah, but firstly, how was your week, Jess?
My week was good. I've done some launching of some projects, like working for myself, coaching stuff. So I've been working on some stuff behind the scenes of that, which is really cool. I did a really exciting training session with my women's team on Tuesday last week. That I just decided to put in a like a big thread on social media, and then I've turned that into a bit of a piece because I was really kind of pleased with my reflections of it. But basically, I planned this referee session before the announcement of Tom Foley that we spoke about on last week's pod. Essentially, it was me initially in the first game refereeing training games, but with a very deliberate bias against one team, and then I swapped to half time. Like, not even narrow calls went against them. Like, sometimes passes were called forward and they were not forward. Like, teams were called offside and they were definitely not offside. And then I kind of switched that bias at half time. And then all the players had a go at refereeing. And not only did it help their game sense of just playing to the referee, but I think it also helped their empathy, their leadership, and I think it especially helped their mental skills, because sometimes you can find yourself, you almost put yourself under mental pressure if you feel calls are going against you. There's this sort of perceived injustice that happens. And my team that I love so much, they'll stick up for each other. So if there is a perceived injustice, it'll kind of affect them a bit more because they look after each other so much. There's a tight bond. So we worked on some refereeing stuff to really help us with our mental skills. So that was a pretty much a highlight of my week, and that's like a nice little. I'm gonna do more stuff around referees with them. So that was like a level one session. We introduced it just like we would do any other skill introduction or work on. So that was kind of a highlight of my week, and then I was helping some students with some assessments later on in the week. with some like badminton and cricket sessions they've been planning and stuff like that in the sports hall. So that was really cool as well.
Yeah, that looked really cool, that Twitter thread. I think it's something that probably even at the elite level in both men's and women's game isn't done enough. And I think we've been seeing it sort of more in international level over the years, like having referees come into like international training camps, international training sessions for things like the Six Nations. But probably even at a professional level, and definitely even at like sort of an amateur level, we're not seeing enough of that, you know, adapting to a referee and trying to have empathy in that situation, because it is frustrating. Because I've had it both as a player and as a spectator, you know, seeing perceived inconsistencies or perceived bias. But when you put yourself in those shoes, it is really difficult. And you know, with the news about Tom Foley, with the, you know, the revelations about Wayne Barnes and why he said one of the reasons why he retired was, I definitely think it's a step in the right direction of making sure that we're having that understanding, so we're not going too far and abusing referees who by and large do a great job.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, the reflections from everybody after they put themselves in that referee spot, and I was very clear. I gave them two things to look at only, which was knock-ons and forward passes. Anything else they wanted to work on and notice as a time as a referee was a plus. But they all said, A, how difficult it was because they were refereeing their mates, but B, how difficult it is to try and spot everything all at the same time, and they're still learning the laws. So they don't know the vast amount of laws the referees have to look for because they're a development women's team. So they found that quite overwhelming, just the sheer amount of things to look at, to notice, to observe when you're in the role as a referee. So it was a really good exercise, and I really do recommend, even if you don't coach or play rugby, I think the next time you're watching a game, if you just try and put yourself and watch the referee and just watch the kind of vast amount of work they have to do to position themselves in the right way so they're not getting in the way of the game, and think about how much they're watching, I think, you know, the abuse against referees would certainly lessen if we all did that little exercise.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it's another bumper episode for you guys this weekend. Firstly, we're going to be reviewing what seems to be quite a tough loss away against Ealing Trailfinders. So we're going to be going into that and picking perhaps what went wrong, but also focusing on the positives as well, as we face the very, very, very taunting challenge of facing Saracens Women at home at Matty Ole Woods Welford Road at 3 p.m. on Saturday this weekend. So we'll be previewing the Saturday game against Saracens at the end of our pod. We're going to have another big news section looking at other PWR results. And then we're going to sort of digest and discuss and go through the news in released in the past couple of days that Rocky Clark has left the club by mutual consent. And she was the scrum coach, going to look at, you know, how that might affect things and the sort of the makeup of the coaching team going forward. And then we're going to have, you know, we've had requests from our listeners to sort of have a look through at the Pathways program for Leicester Tigers women's rugby and women's rugby in the city, in the county and the wider area. So we're going to do something on that for you guys. And then also our player profile this week, it's going to be focused on the backs again. And we're going to have our Swedish superstar fullback Amanda Swartz to focus on in our player profile. So that's the episode for you. That's the episode preview for you guys this weekend. And yeah, enjoy.
So we now turn to our game review. The game wasn't streamed on TNT Sports, so we've kind of dug up what information we can. We've watched the highlights. Jacob, you've gone over the interview that Tigers did with Meg Jones. I have to say, I want to kick it off with some positives, because yes, it's frustrating, it's disappointing that, you know, two teams went into this looking for their first PWR win in the league, and unfortunately the victors were not us, but we seem to be setting some sort of trend here of whoever we speak to on the pod then goes on in the next game and scores a try. So I don't know what that says about the power of our podcast, but we clearly are full of inspiration, because Ellis Martin scored in the Trailfinders game. She scored off a rolling maul, which is absolutely what we love to see as Tigers fans. And Tigers women's team talk about playing to that Tigers DNA and what that means across the club. Scoring off a rolling maul is definitely fulfilling that, living up to that Tigers DNA. It was disappointing, I think, from a perspective where we'd spoken about in the previous pod about slow starts. And I kind of thought when I was watching the live scores come in, I saw Trailfinders get a couple of scores. I think it was 12-0 at one point. And then I saw the Ellis Martin score come in, 12-7. At that point, it was still the first half. And I was like, aha, we've kicked into gear a little bit earlier. How amazing. We've kind of, okay, slow first quarter, but at least it's not a slow second half with then a Tigers comeback. But I think it slipped away again in the first half because Trailfinders scored two more tries. But the positive to take away from that is actually, okay, the game then continuously slipped away from us. But actually, we did show glimmers of switching on in the first half, which if we were, you know, if we were coaching, we'd identified in our podcast that was a work on from the previous games. So it was nice to see that come in. And that's obviously, I guess, been talked about because we got that first half score for rolling more. What were your initial thoughts, Jacob, was pouring over kind of the highlights and the interviews and stuff?
Yeah, definitely. I think, again, it's another sort of slow start, which is really disappointing to see. I mean, you know, I'm sure that the coaches and the players are aware of this. They're working on it, and you know, no one's doubting their efforts at all. So, you know, it will come. It will come. It's just getting over that mental block now, which perhaps might be developing. But you know, as I said, I'm sure the coaches and the senior players, Tash, Meg Jones, you know, are doing everything they can to solve that. And the social media posts that have been coming out, you know, seem to suggest that. Just on our sort of our magic touch, as it were. I mean, the club is very welcome. We're happy to interview more than one player per episode. So, if the club want a little bit of our help, we're more than happy to oblige. Yeah, it's good to see another rolling maul score. That's twice in a week now. We've scored off that, so I'm happy we're building in the right direction that area of the pitch. Different kinds of maul tries as well. Obviously, the try against Loughborough Lightning last weekend was from throwing to the tail and, you know, catching out the Loughborough Lightning pack in that edge, and we were able to get the power over the line. The try this week was a bit more just a pure power game, which was really nice to see. And on the, you know, I don't know about you, Jess, because I've actually never played on a plastic pitch, but I'm guessing that mauling and scrummaging on a plastic pitch is a bit different than doing it on a like a, you know, a grassy or a synthetic pitch like they've got on Matty Lee Woods Welford Road. But just quickly, I think in the Meg Jones interview that she did with LTTTV, she said that there was a lot of disappointment conveyed, and that's quite understandable. You know, we were both Leicester Tigers and Ealing were going into this game looking for their first win. That meant sort of all cards were off the table a little bit, and I think it, even despite how we played, it was probably still in our hands a bit, especially in that first half and even the second half as well. Like Meg Jones was talking about how, you know, Ealing sort of were able to dominate in the first half because they had the wind behind them, and they used that for their kicking game to their advantage. Whereas in the second half, when Tigers had the wind behind them, they weren't really doing that to that extent, and that meant that they couldn't really add to that. They couldn't get the field position to add to that only score of the game. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, there's no reasons to be at panic stations. We're still building, you know, and Ealing were at home. That's going to be an advantage to them, you know, and they've got players like Abby Dow, so who, you know, she came off the bench and scored their penultimate try, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of talent in that Ealing side. You know, there's talent in our side as well. I'm not doubting that at all. But I don't think there's anything to particularly to be massively worrying about just yet.
No, and you can see the work in defence from my perspective start to build. So the highlights don't give you kind of, it's not like watching a match. So I'm only kind of taking select bits, and they don't kind of show the full momentum and build up to a score. They generally show like one to two phases before, if you're lucky. So the bits that I'm glimpsing are real kind of snippets of the game. But from what I've seen in defence, obviously, because there were a lot of Trailfinder scores, but that really enabled me to look at defence and focus on what Tigers were doing in defence and the hard graft that they were doing. There was a lot of hard graft from our perspective in defence. If Trailfinders broke through, then we did really well to reorganise the defensive line. If we made that a kind of a last-ditch tackle attempt, we were really good at reorganising the line and getting it in and getting the process sorted. That's kind of level one of getting your defensive line sorted. Can you reorganise yourself well after a breakthrough, which they've done? Now, they're kind of working on that kind of level two, level three push on for me. Is now they need to make sure that the intent is there after they've reformed the line, but working solid as a team and making sure you reorganize your defensive line after a break, after there's been a breakthrough, is really good. And from what I saw, we all reorganized ourselves really well, because it can be really easy to splinter, to fracture after there's been a breakthrough and just have breakthrough after breakthrough after breakthrough. But we actually reorganized our line really, really well, which is really pleasing. There's a couple of defensive frailties, which, again, I know we keep saying it, but the more we play against higher quality opponents like we are doing, and the more this team spend time playing together, they've played 3-4 games so far as a squad, as a unit, because of the signings we've made over the summer. So the more they play together, the better they're going to get, and they'll get rid of these defensive frailties. I saw Trailfinders score just a bit too easily out wide. So I saw there was just one or two players biting in defence in the centre, you know, two, three players going for one ball carrier who then passes, then you're done. Because especially if you've got somebody speedy like Abby Dow in attack that you're trying to defend against, that you give her any sniff of space, let alone space created by two or three players biting in, then they're going to take advantage of that. The flip side is that's what we are sometimes able to do with our speed and our attack in our back line. So kind of what the ability that we have and can exploit in other teams is kind of being done to us. What that means is it's probably slightly easier to recognise and to train with, because I imagine it's something we're trying to play and exploit and train with in defence and in our own matches. So it's not something we're not used to seeing, because I think we can see that ability to draw in two, three players, then exploit space out wide for someone speedy. That's probably a ploy we're doing in our own team. So what we're facing is a challenge that we hopefully will also put to other teams as well. But it's just a couple of defensive issues. But the real positive for me, and that there are tons of positives, the real positive is how quickly we were able to reform that defensive line after there was a breakthrough. Because it's so easily, you know, it's just, you can just scatter. So the fact we're able to reorganise our line is really good. Now we've got that, big tick in the box is how can we push on from that and using the next few games to put those learnings into place, which they no doubt will do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just on sort of the defensive cohesion, especially in that back line, I mean, we have been sort of picking a more consistent backline now. It seems that we're going for Amanda Swartz at fullback, Fury and McGee on the wings, and obviously Meg Jones at 13. Obviously, last weekend we had Katie Childs, one of our Swedish internationals. She was interviewed last year on the Rolling Mall pod, so she's been with us for a while longer. She was playing at inside centre for the first time, like inside Meg Jones. So obviously, yeah, even though we've got sections of a backline who do have a lot of game time together, that's still at the very elite level, that's still probably quite small compared to other teams. I mean, maybe not against Ealing, but the point still stands that you probably don't have that trust yet between, and that's what leads to biting in, because you don't know that you don't automatically know that the player inside you is going to make that sort of cover tackle. And also you're trying to compensate. There's a lot of factors that go into players biting in, and then you factor in that you've got Katie Charles and Meg Jones playing as the sort of 12-13 combo for the first time. That can be, you know, as we can see across the game, that centre partnership is probably the key, one of the sort of the key linchpins in both attack and defence. So that's probably, that could explain why we're a bit sort of maybe clunky in that area, and we were biting in. But, you know, as I said, it's not anything to be massively worried about. And obviously, like you've identified, Jess, it's really good that we are doing really well on the scramble, because you've got to have a good scramble. You are going to make line breaks. People are going to make mistakes, and you know that those need to be rectified in game. There's no point being like, oh, you should have just made that tackle in the front. Obviously, everyone's got to try 100% in every single tackle, but there are going to be mistakes. You know, like you see in the game now, especially in how attack focused and how speedy the women's game is, you're going to see a lot of line breaks. So the ability to have that scramble is really good. It's just sort of having that, it's building on that trust, and you know, hopefully we can sort of, you know, be able to disrupt more on that scramble defense, and you know, prevent teams from scoring out wide. Because I felt like in quite a few of the tries from the weekend, they broke through the line, we're able to scramble, we're able to reset, but we were still too narrow, and they were able to get on the outside of us. So it's kind of, it's making sure we're not too narrow, not too inward looking, on, you know, looking towards the ball. I was always guilty of it. I was always next to the ruck and always looking at where the ball was. You know, it's a completely natural reaction. But yeah, plenty stuff to work on. But they are easy fixes. They're not necessarily like long term fixes as well. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely some positives there, and you know, I'm sure even though we've got a very very daunting challenge against Saracens this weekend against at Matthew Ellie Woods Welford Road, you know, there's still the opportunity to build on our defence against what is by far the best team in the league.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that when the games aren't on TNT Sports, it's difficult for then us to review a game, because what we're given will automatically be skewed towards the winning team. We won't see in the highlights and the comments section, you know, great moments where Tigers were building, were having momentum, were, you know, building with the ball in attack, but then something happened and there was an error or whatever. We don't see those moments, because the only thing the highlight shows us are the bits that lead up to tries. So naturally, if the scoreline goes against Tigers, we'll miss out on those other bits that were undoubtedly great moments of positive play. So that, you know, when the game isn't on TNT, when it's just highlights, we're always going to be a little bit skewed on what we're able to talk about, which in this case leads us to talk about some defense. But it probably means that we're missing at the moment talking about some great moments in attack, which probably happened on the day that sadly we're unable to see, because we know we've got a fantastic backline. As we said, it could have been last week's episode, maybe the week before. If all we do this season is put in good performances, good solid performances at home, then I don't know about you, but I'm perfectly happy with that as a target. I think that's a really good target to set ourselves. Is it a shame that we couldn't claim this first league win against Trailfinders when both teams were fighting for their first PWR league win? Yes, but I think it ignites a bit of a fire in us for the return fixture when they come to our home turf, which is really, really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, no, I agree. We've got to have sort of attainable goals, and one of those is, you know, being tough to beat at home. You know, it's make it to, and to be fair, I think thus far at season we actually have been tough to beat at Mattie Woods Welford Road. I mean, Exeter only sort of pulled away last 5-10 minutes of the first game. Loughborough Lightning, it was a similar story. We were only 5 points down at one point. You know, so I definitely think that we're, you know, especially at Mattie Woods Welford Road, we have been tough to beat, and that's a good starting platform, and that will enable us to be niggly, to have some smash and grab wins, and then we have a bit of a, and then that fortress mentality can start to build, and that belief that you can win, especially if we do continue to suffer from slow starts, starts to sort of wane a bit, or starts to you know, the belief that we can sort of fight against that slow start becomes more genuine in the players' heads. So yeah, absolutely. As I said, like, you know, we can only really watch the full match replays of the matches shown on TNT, so we can't go too much into the game. And you know, like I said, it is always frustrating. I mean, going back to, we've spoken about this before on the pod, but the fact that the highlights that we only get is some of the selected tries that Ealing scored. You know, it's sort of it's someone commenting over the game. It's not really, and the highlights are sort of only 2-3 minutes long. We're not getting sort of an in-depth view, and that means we're perhaps getting quite a selective view of the game. And you know, maybe moments are missing out. Maybe in the second half, it could have been a bit closer, and we could have got a few extra scores. I'm not sure. So, you know, we can only sort of go off what we've been off, but you know, I'm especially from the going back to the Meg Jones interview on LTT TV, there was definitely a lot of disappointment, and that probably conveys more accurately than the match report, than the match highlights, sorry, of how the game went. And yeah, I think to probably lose by convincing margins, probably a bit disappointing, considering that we're both looking for our first win. But you know, I think firstly we have to credit Ealing for playing how they did. They were especially really good, you know, in open play. A lot of those tries were from open play, from the, you know, from making line breaks, from a kicking game, which we saw for one try where the ball just bounced absolutely horribly on a 3G pitch, and one of the Ealing sort of trailing support runners was able to dot it over. So, you know, I think we have to credit Ealing for playing really, really well. And, you know, obviously congratulations to them on getting their first win in the PWR. And yeah, definitely when they come back to Mattie Ely Woods Welford Road, I'm looking forward to that being a very, very tasty fixture.
So I feel like we need a news intro better than me just sort of shuffling papers. But you can imagine I'm sat at a news desk shuffling some papers because it is time for our news section. And as is tradition now, I'm going to start by running you through the rest of the PWR scores that happened at the weekend. So Loughborough Lightning played Bristol. Loughborough scored 17 and Bristol scored a whopping 48. And then Harlequins played Exeter. Quinns scored 27 and Exeter scored 52. And we're just about to talk about it. Unfortunately, the Gloucester Hartbury versus Sale game was postponed. So, Jacob, I'll kind of bring you up to speed on that now and kind of give you the rundown of what happened. And the frustrating thing is, and I'll come on and say, it's happened before. So, unfortunately, the Gloucester Hartbury versus Sale game was postponed due to, and I'm going to quote this to get it right, absent medical support. That was the official kind of line. The game kickoff was initially delayed and then the match was postponed. And I saw that someone said on Twitter that this is really disappointing because the crowd attendance at Gloucester was really good, which is a shame. And I saw a tweet from Fee Thomas, who's the women's sport reporter for The Telegraph, that said it was a, quote, random no-show. And again, I quote again, imagine the outrage if this happened in the men's game. And there was a few people saying online that for the league to push on, this issue has to be resolved. Now, my recollection is that it's not the first time this has happened. And I was supported in this, my memory, it wasn't completely wrong, because Twitter user, ex-user Simon Ellingworth said that he'd been to two games. So he's been really unlucky, one at Worcester and one at Loughborough, where this has happened. So this has happened a few times. I remember it happening at least once last season, which might have been Worcester. And then according to this Twitter user, Simon Ellingworth, it's also happened at Loughborough as well, which is just really disappointing. And like Fee Thomas said, you can imagine the outrage if this has happened in like men's professional rugby. Obviously, we just had the European / South African Champions Cup melting pot competition for the men's this weekend. I was at Tigers to see them play Stormers. If that had happened in that fixture, there would have been mass outrage. But because it's women's sport, it's happened in the past, there's only a few people kind of joining the voices of outcrying it. We all just kind of, I'm not saying we passively accept it, but there's sort of this aura of it's fine because it'll only happen a few games in a season. The rest of the PWR league and fixtures and organisation is happening, and that's great. And I don't know, because I don't work behind the scenes organising it. I don't know what goes wrong when communicating it. Obviously, you know, medics and ambulances and St John's ambulances are in high demand. You know, there are strains on our services. I'm not going to get too political. So I don't know if that is at play and affects things. I don't know if it's an organisational issue. I know this has happened in the past. It's happened now. And it's often, you know, you often find out last minute in front of crowds and the game's postponed. So I don't know how we fix it, because I'm not one of the people, an organiser sat in a room knowing the ins and outs of the problems. And I'm probably sure people are tearing their hair out at this. But it needs to get fixed. I don't know how we fix it, because I don't know what the problem is and why there's random no-shows, or, you know, strains on services are a little larger than rugby. But something needs to happen, because we can't have games cancelled and postponed like this. This, you know, we keep going on about that this is the best domestic women's league, women's competition in rugby in the world. So we can't have logistical issues like this. And I don't know about you, Jacob, but again, I'm not quite sure how we solve it, but it has to get solved.
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. I think it's really difficult, because obviously we don't know the ins and outs. We don't know why medical support wasn't available. And, you know, for very obvious reasons, games need medical support, you know. So obviously the right decision was made for the safety of players, for the safety of fans, everyone, you know. It was completely the right decision in terms of the game actually being postponed. But yeah, it is really frustrating. And, you know, it to have this, and then the game obviously last week as well, the Sale game get called off because the pitch wasn't in the right condition. You know, yes, there are factors that clubs can't control, you know, the weather, strikes, strain on our healthcare system. Obviously we're a rugby podcast, not going to get too deep into the political side of things, but, you know, like you said, this league says, you know, we want to believe that the PWR is the best domestic women's league in the world. But that means, and, you know, I definitely think that still is the case, but that doesn't mean that we should be sort of sat on our laurels.
Just sort of a little snippet of our pathway feature that's coming up. For those that are unaware, because it was mentioned on Twitter a little bit, but sort of past the weekend quietly, there was history made at the weekend. So at the weekend, several girls players from Brooksby College played in the first ever girls under 18s Barbarians fixture against Rugby School Invitational 15. They were also coached by Tigers / Brooksby College coach Stevie Hanna. I think this is amazing, when we're going to chat about pathway rugby in a little bit, to have a girls under 18s Barbarians team, you know, is really exciting, and it's really pleasing to see. And I think they're in partnership with Girls Rugby Club, who do some camp stuff. They've done some, they get kind of get coaches in, like Rachel Burford, Rocky Clark, Emily Scarrett. I've done a bit of coaching stuff for them. And it's really great because they sort of do these camps around the country and kind of spread the word and get girls' rugby club like day camps, and they're really exciting things to be part of. So it's really pleasing to see that there's a kind of a separate pathway initiative being set up and different pathways set up for girls to have lots of different playing opportunities. So I'm really pleased to see that the Barbarians have sort of put in their hand up to help support pathways of women's rugby, which is really, really pleasing to see.
Yeah, I think it's a really great initiative, and it's about having different pathways and different routes of access for girls to pick up the sport. In the county, I think that the clubs are fairly strong. I know that just Hinckley and Lutterworth particularly have got pretty good women's sides, both at sort of development and sort of more of a senior level. Obviously that there's a long way to go, but they've got good systems in place, and they're getting a lot of girls coming getting introduced to sport and playing rugby quite regularly. Obviously, we're blessed to have one of the best sporting universities, Loughborough, and a lot of girls are going to pick up the sport through their playing for Bucks. This is really good to see that we've got different avenues, and really hats off to Stevie Hannah and the rest of the Tigers and the Barbarians and Rugby School for doing that event. And I can only hope that this is again this becomes more of a regular thing. This is more of a institutionalized sort of setup. And yeah, as we go on later on in the pod, we're going to be delving deeper into the pathways that we do have in the county, in the city, and in the wider area.
Yeah, so obviously I mentioned Rocky Clark because she's done some coaching work for Girls Rugby Club, which is how I know her. I've done some day camps coaching with her at Huddersfield, Sheffield, and I'm sure there's another location. But yeah, so I know her fairly ish well. We've done those day camps coaching together. So I was kind of mixed feelings about this announcement, because isn't it great that we had the legend that is Rocky Clark within the coaching staff? But at the same time, we can tell probably from the way her social media and the Tigers news release was worded that actually she's probably following her passion now in broadcasting, which brings me on to my next news. So Rocky Clark has left coaching Leicester Tigers women's team. She's left the club by mutual agreement to concentrate on her broadcasting and media career. As I said previously, this was both stated by Tigers News and Rocky's own social media. I know Rocky does a lot of work for broadcasters, including some commentary work. Side note is I also spied on her socials that she's returned to playing, which is ace. She played for Buckingham Swans this weekend. Just covering the Tigers news on what happens now. So forwards coach Luke Stratford and senior coach Tom Hudson will take over Clark's responsibilities. Actually, before I go into feelings on that and thoughts and processing, there was a few news reports. They always do these like clickbaity headlines, big Leicester Tigers, England legend exits the club, stuff like this. Made some big headlines out of her leaving. I saw it on Facebook, and there was a couple of comments underneath that. And I know you're probably saying, Jess, why did you click on those Facebook comments? But they just really irked me, saying people would know who is this England legend? I've never heard of them. Blah 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 blah, like this. And I was like, well, hang on, just hang on a minute. She's got 137 caps. She's an MBE and a World Cup winner. Like she is absolutely a legend. But kind of returning to what this means for Tigers, and kind of what it means for Rocky Clark. Obviously, because I know her, send her nothing but the best wishes and the love, because no one is held prisoner at Tigers, or in any other coaching role, we hope, at any other institution, because that's not what gets the most out of people. People need to love doing, they need to do what they love. And I don't know about anybody else, but I'd rather have committed people who love what they do, So I wish her all the very best in her broadcasting work, because it's quite clear she's following her passion. You have to follow your passion in what you do. Coming back to the Tigers' focus, it's disappointing for me that we've lost a specialised scrum coach. Whoever that is, that role is vacant. Obviously, the forwards coach and the head coach are going to take over those responsibilities. But if I can just scrum nerd out for a minute, our scrum does need work. And I say this with full respect towards the women's team, because it is a step up. I'm not saying, oh, they clearly haven't put the work in pre-season or in past seasons, because I'm not saying that at all. I think the scrum represents how big of a step up it is to the PWR. And those improvements will come in the scrum. The more they scrummage against different teams at a PWR level, the better they will get, the more they will learn. But they need to have the coach support in that. And I've no doubt they will in the senior head coach and the forwards coach. The improvements as a pack will come. And as I say, Rocky leaving, people need to make the choice that is right for them and do what they enjoy. I would like to see us, from a scrum perspective, work on our body shape and our timing. Sometimes what I've noticed is we're not always great at it's not. I'm not going to call it a hit, because the hit is outlawed. So it always annoys me when people talk about the hit now, because it shouldn't be a hit. If you're coaching the hit, you're coaching the kind of an illegal scrum. We can't survive the initial lean on sometimes from other teams. We can't survive that initial pressure. So our body shape gets very destabilized from the outset. So it's a case of working on that initial body shape and then working on our timing as a whole pack. So I'm hoping, obviously, they're going to be working on those things behind the scenes. And yes, our scrum does need work. So yes, it's a shame we've lost a scrum coach. It's a shame we've lost the scrum expertise of Rocky Clark. But to be very clear, she's gone to pursue what is her passion, and people should absolutely do what they love. I know our pack needs work on those things, but the more time they play in the PWR, the better it's going to be, because they're just simply playing against and scrummaging against a higher standard. That's a very, very, very steep learning curve. But with them work, combining that with work on the training part that they're doing and work in the gym that they're doing, those improvements will come. Scrums take time to develop. Props take time to develop. I don't know who said this stat, or whether I magic this stat up one day. I don't know. Somebody can tell me. But I always say that props never hit their peak until they're about 30. That's men's props. Because it simply takes time to scrummage against quality opposition. Like Dan Cole wasn't just... I'm talking about Dan Cole again on this prod, and I don't apologise. Dan Cole wasn't just born and suddenly became a magnificent prop. That's not how it works. You have to develop your craft. You know, you have to... It's like Michelangelo doesn't wake up one day and be a genius painter, genius artist. You have to develop your craft and work on it over time. So you have to work on your body shape, your body height, your core, your timings, your neck strength. Particularly in women's rugby, you have to work on your neck strength, because we know there's all kinds of work going on around tackle stuff and neck strengthening and stability in women's rugby when it relates to the tackle. It also relates, I think, when it comes to scrum stuff, you have to work on your neck strength and stability. All of these things take time. So yes, the pack is being stretched at the moment and put under pressure by high quality opposition, but that will inevitably make them better. Jacob, I'm aware I've rambled for scrums for, I don't, probably about 4 minutes now. But what are your thoughts?
No, you're right, Jess. Don't worry. I mean, firstly, scrums comparing to Michelangelo, I will agree with that. I think scrummaging isn't art. So I will absolutely agree with you on that one. But no, yeah, absolutely right. I mean, I think what we've got to remember here is that, you know, coming from the Championship to the PWR, there is a really steep difference between packs in those two leagues, because you're up against front rows. You know, not only is there sort of like, you know, better sort of more professional training setups, more regular gym sessions, but in the PWR, obviously, we've got players that play not just for England, but different countries that are on professional contracts, that are doing, you know, is doing a lot more gym work than other people, that can do a lot more sort of specific scrum related exercises and weightlifting and all those kind of things. So, just from that perspective as well, we're up against a lot more experienced and a lot more high level trained athletes in that area, and that is gonna sort of hurt us as a team. You know, we are new to this league, you know, alongside Ealing as well, but everyone else has been in the league, you know, more or less since the Alliance 15s was set up sort of in 2017. So there's a lot of experience, a lot of game time in that of playing as a unit. And, you know, yes, I only scrummed at sort of a junior sort of under 16 Colts level. But, you know, even in then, like, scrummaging is very much a unit thing. You know, everyone works the same. It's not just the two props pushing. It's the hooker having the correct bind. It's the second rowers, you know, using their shoulders, using their legs. It's the flankers, and this was a skill that I really struggled with. It's the flankers, you know, also pushing with their shoulder and having the right power and having the right weight coming through on the other prop's leg as well. So it's a whole unit thing. And, you know, I think, you know, just going back to the Facebook thing, yes, there's going to be idiots that are always going to comment like that. But it did make me think that, you know, perhaps we actually hadn't, as a podcast, hadn't actually been talking enough about Rocky Clark. I mean, I know it doesn't matter now because she's left the club, but that was a real statement signing, I felt at the time. You know, she was an absolute legend of the game. And, you know, by all accounts, she's a really good, I mean, obviously you can vouch this because you've done coaching with her, that she is a very good coach, as well as, you know, very, very insightful, very, very intelligent, as well as her, you know, commentary work. And I hope just on that she can bring her scrumming expertise to commentary and to punditry, because, you know, we see sort of in punditry at the moment that there isn't enough like ex-props, you know, telling general viewers how a scrum works, why does a scrum collapse, why does the ref make certain calls when it looks like it could be a different call. So, you know, I hope that Rocky can sort of bring her expertise to that and, you know, help explain scrums as to why they're actually an essential and crucial part of our game, and a beautiful and lovely part of our game that, you know, shouldn't get changed, whatever the Kiwis think about it. But anyway, that's a random aside. But, you know, I definitely agree with you. As we play more as a unit, as we get more exposure, as, you know, we get more time training in the gym and conditioning, we will get to that level. It's definitely a steep learning curve, but we are going to get there. And, you know, hopefully, by all accounts, this change in the coaching setup hasn't been too dramatic. And, you know, I'm not exactly at panic stations or anything. And obviously, yeah, I all my best to Rocky Clark in her commentary and social media and broadcasting work. And yeah, I don't think you know, don't panic, Mr. Mattering. You know, it's all gonna be okay for our scrum.
So now it's time for a bit of a different section in the pod. We've had a few people contact us saying they want to know more about the pathway that Tigers women have set up, and maybe a little bit more about the girls' pathway in England, in the RFU in general, because as much as we talk about the matches, the scores, results, amazing tries scored from this season, we do keep talking about the fact that it is all about building momentum. And in order to make women's rugby at Leicester Tigers in the PWR League, in the best domestic women's league in the world, sustainable, there has to be a really good pathway system. And that pathway is kind of a two-pronged attack or two-pronged system. So one, it is developing girls' rugby to ensure future talent comes through and is secured, nurtured, developed, and given the right level of opportunity for each player. It's also to ensure that there's a level of competition and development for anybody currently playing in adult women's rugby. So are you knocking on the door of that Tigers jersey? Are you, you know, shoving somebody out of the way for your position on the bench or as an impact player? You know, and where do you get your opportunities if you want to try and push into that Tigers squad? So I've done a little bit of a general kind of breakdown into the Tigers pathway, and we've got an interview with our head of pathway. But I'll kind of just give you a run through of what the RFU girls pathway and Tigers pathway kind of looks like and how it all fits together. So A lot of this is new-ish information because last season the girls' pathway in the RFU underwent some additions and change. So it now looks like this. At the sort of lower level of the pathway system, you've got the Girls Developing Player Programme, which is new, Girls DPP. Then you've got County Rugby. Then above County Rugby sits Centre of Excellence. Then England under-18s, England under-20s, the PWR, and then, of course, the cherry on top is the Red Roses playing for England. There's lots of work that goes on behind the scenes into growing a pathway and ensuring it's the best environment to help everybody grow and develop because people develop at different rates. As I said, the Girls DPP is new. It was put in place in 2022. It's for the under-16s and is run by the constituent body. So that's your CB. So the CB for my area is Yorkshire. So Yorkshire, for me, run the Girls DPP. It's run by volunteer coaches. I've had some experience coaching in girls county rugby. So I've coached girls under 18s here for Yorkshire, and I've had some experience with the boys DPP. Obviously, the more opportunities we have for girls rugby to develop and everybody to kind of dip their toe in and see what pathway rugby looks like and get experiences is the better. So they've obviously started that under 16s and say, just like boys DPP, it's run by volunteer coaches, but they get some support from RFU and CB systems and stuff like that. So moving on to the PWR, other PWR clubs have additional pathway stops that run alongside and kind of link in with the general RFU national pathway systems that we've got. So Saracens, for example, have a senior development academy that kind of just sits underneath their PWR team. And then moving on to Tigers. So Tigers have existing pathways with Lichfield and Kenilworth. Those are kind of, from my understanding, adult women pathways. So where are you playing if you're knocking on the door of having a Tigers jersey, of training with the Tigers squad? You might be playing at Lichfield and Kenilworth and get looked at and checked in with coaches. You'll get some check-ins with Tigers coaches, with the head of pathways. Some chats about you might be happening between our head of pathway and Vicky McQueen, just to see where your development is, to ensure that everybody's getting the right level of opportunity. So Stevie Hannah, who we mentioned earlier in our news section, he's also the head of rugby operations at Brooksby College, where there's a Leicester Tigers Girls Rugby Pathway Programme, which is a bit of a mouthful, but that's its full title. And girls within the programme study for qualifications, including A-levels and BTECs, whilst playing rugby against other colleges. So that's another kind of section in that girls' pathway that we've got going at Tigers. And I kind of pulled this quote from Tigers' website that gives you a really good run-through of what the days, weeks looks like for any girl who's interested in rugby that wants to get involved at Brooksby College. This is what their weeks look like. So, and I quote, the girls are timetabled for education sessions in the morning and train Monday, Tuesday and Friday afternoons with fixtures on a Wednesday, with Thursday being a rest day from rugby whilst timetabled for education. So it's a jam-packed week, but it's balanced to ensure that they get both time for education and rugby, because we know that, unfortunately, playing rugby at women's level is not a full-time job. And even if it was, you needed somewhere to go after you had retired from the sport. So balancing rugby and education, especially for girls on a pathway system, is really, really key. So that's a bit of a kind of run through of what the pathway system currently looks like for girls. Obviously, we've had that new edition of the under-16s girls DPP, which is really, really exciting. It's just another slot on the kind of system of places where girls can drop in to pathway rugby and get a taster and add to their development level. So to chat about this kind of pathway stuff at Tigers and girls and women's pathway as a whole, I spoke to our head of pathway at Tigers, who's also head coach of Lichfield women's team, Fraser Gocha, and he kind of gave me a run through of what Tigers pathway looks like and any kind of thoughts and excitement for the future. So thank you so much for coming on the pod. Obviously, Tigers women's team have a pathway link with Lichfield, and they also have a partner pathway link with Kenilworth. What do those look like in the kind of day-to-day, month-to-month? What's the practicality of those?
Yeah, so obviously, Lichfield are the principal partner club that we call them. Obviously, there's a really strong link between Tigers women and Lichfield. If you look at the majority of... Well, a lot of the players in the current Tigers women's squad have played for or come through the Lichfield programme at some point. So at the moment, it's where most of our pathway players are based. Is at Lichfield, and Kenilworth is used for our dual registered. So girls within the Tiger squad who need some game time, that they will go to Kenilworth and play there. We're also starting to involve some other clubs with that as well. So we've started some links up with Worcester Town and with Henley Hawks as well.
Awesome. And then, which leads me on kind of nicely to my next question, which, as well as being head of pathway for Tigers, you're also the head coach of Lichfield women's team. So obviously you're more involved in those kind of conversations with Vicky to ensure that there's progression through the pathway. So what kind of stuff do you give her information on, or what kind of stuff do you chat about to ensure that players have a chance to progress?
Yeah, so myself and Vicky talk like, if not like once a week, it'll be more than that. The conversations we'll be having is how the players that we've sort of pinpointed are developing. And at certain points, if we think that they're developing in the sort of the right amount, then they'll get the opportunity to train with Tigers for a week, just to see how, one, it's a good opportunity for those girls to go in and see what the environment's like and see what the standard of player is like as well. And it's also a good opportunity for the coaches to have a look at that player as well. So yeah, lots of conversations, sometimes some hard ones. If we don't think some girls are progressing as well, then obviously we need to make some changes. But yeah, it's a like Vicky and Tom and Luke and all of the coaches at Tigers do a really, really good job of making sure that they're involved with the pathway. It'd be really easy for them to sort of sit to one side and let me crack on, but they do a really good job of being involved and being present. So no, it's good.
And that's awesome. And just on a kind of a wider perspective, if we zoom out for a second, obviously the girls' pathway in England is partially run by the constituent bodies, by the CB, and there's now obviously thankfully a DPP system in place for girls' rugby. How will Tigers link in with the kind of pre-existing systems and the new systems that England Rugby are working on? Is there plans for that? How do you plan to incorporate those existing pathway structures?
We've kind of already started that process with the relationship that we have with Brooksby College. So obviously we have a girls program which has grown massively this year. And we have a lot of sort of 18 to 19 year old players at Lichfield as well. So we've kind of tried to start that process ourselves. But I can fully imagine within the next sort of 2 to 3 years that Tigers will have their own sort of centre of excellence. Every other premiership club, women's premiership club anyway, does at the moment. So I'd imagine that we won't be far behind. It only makes sense.
Nice. Yeah, no, I agree. And it mentioning the college leads me on nicely to my next question, which is obviously Tigers do great work in the community. We know they've got links with schools and colleges and the wider community. Alongside the college, and maybe giving a bit more detail into that, what does Tigers women's work look like within the wider community?
Yeah, so I know that they do quite a few player appearances at the moment. So there'll be various players go along to sort of different grassroots clubs, different women's teams that have either just started up or are holding different events, recruitment, whatever it might be, and go along and help with those. Obviously, we have Brooksby College, like I mentioned, and the girls' program there. So we do have some women's players that come down and have a watch and help out with that sometimes. And obviously, myself being involved at Brooksby as well, and a few other Tigers women's coaches being involved at Brooksby, there's always eyes on that program. There's always people helping out. So yeah, look, the Tigers women's team have been very, very good at getting out within the community and trying to be a presence within the community, let people know that they're there. Obviously, there's good links with the universities as well. We've done quite a few sessions with them to try and help out their women's teams. So no, it's going well, and it will only get bigger. The reach will only get greater. So it's going well.
Good. No, that's really good to hear. And then just going back to sort of the more direct pathway link between the women's team and all of your work, how obviously it's when players make that step up to Tigers women's team, it can be a massive step up. So obviously it's really important that players are offered the support that they need. How are players supported?
Well, so initially, if they're gonna, when they first make that step up, obviously there'll be the coaches will be on hand a lot to answer any questions and give them as much feedback as possible. We usually give them like a 2 week period where they'll come in and meet all of the girls so that when they fully start training, it's not because that it's not too overwhelming, because that can be quite a lot trying to take on loads of new information and meeting loads of new people at the same time. For some, that's quite a lot. So we try and give them a bit of a period where they get used to things, and then once they're training, then they'll have all the S&C support that they need, nutrition, if they need rehab work, whatever it is, they'll get all of that support. So we try and make sure that it's as welcoming as environment for them as possible. And it works the same way when girls transition from out of the main squad into the pathway. We do exactly the same thing with them. They get straight to the clubs they're going to. They get to know everyone there. So we try and make it as smooth as possible.
That's really good to hear. And obviously, players, especially on the younger side, will develop at different rates. So how is the pathway set up to ensure that all players get the right opportunity for them?
Well, so that's one of the reasons that we started to add more clubs to that pathway system, is to make sure that we have the right standard for everyone to play at. So obviously with Worcester, Kenilworth, Henley all being in Championship One North, we've got some very good standards of rugby there. With Lichfield, probably should be in Champ One North, but they're still in Champ Two Midlands. But we train and we play at a high standards. We hold ourselves to a very high standard. So, but Lichfield's probably more suited for that younger talent coming through at the moment, just because we put two teams out regularly. There's always rugby to be played. So we try and cater to it that way. And obviously we run pathway sessions every other Monday where the Tigers coaches will coach all of the pathway players. So they'll be getting that support as well. So yeah, I think it works pretty well.
Nice. And then my sort of final question, obviously you mentioned the hope to expand on a Centre of Excellence programme. Are there any further plans to develop the pathway that you can tell us, or anything that you think you would like Premiership clubs to do in order to expand the pathway to make women's rugby accessible at the top level?
This is just my opinion. I think the Centre of Excellence stuff is great, and it's worked really well. But I really think the way forward is just to align with how the men's game do it and have just a full academy, like junior academy, senior academy. I think there are enough female players in the country now to make that work, and it's only going to make the game stronger. So I think all clubs should go to that system. Because if you look at the current Centre of Excellence system, there's girls coming from traveling hours and hours to get to specific Centre of Excellence centres. Whereas if every Premiership women's team has their own academy system rather than Centre of Excellence, then there'll be more rugby of a higher level available, less travel for those girls. So I think for me, that makes more sense going forward, but obviously it's not up to me.
Well, thank you. So we just heard from Fraser, who's head of pathway at Tigers and also head coach of Lichfield women's team. And you've heard about kind of a layout of the landscape of what the RFU pathway is like for girls, what the Tigers pathway is like, and what kind of like other PWR teams are doing alongside. So as I mentioned, Saracens have their own academy, senior development academy that kind of sits under their PWR team. What are you thinking about all of that info, Jacob? And how vital do you think having a good pathway, lots of drop-in, drop-out opportunities are for the development and sustainability of this women's team?
Yeah, firstly, I think thanks for Fraser for that really, really interesting and amazing interview. It's really good to get that level of information across. And obviously, we're trying to give our listeners information about the pathways in the Leicester women's team, and obviously we're learning alongside that as well, which is really good to see. It sounds quite promising, and that we've got really good connections. You know, we're continuing that really good connection with Lichfield. Obviously, we first started off as Leicester Lichfield, and now it's just the Leicester Tigers women. It's good to see that we've still got that connection with Lichfield, that have been sort of a bastion of women's club rugby for so many years. and you know they're continuing to help us out, and obviously we're helping them out in return, which is really good to see. And you know we've got that connection with Kenilworth as well, so you know we've got a strong connections both sides of the Midlands border. So that was really good, and yeah, I agree. It's absolutely key to have different areas of different opportunities and different areas where players can develop their skills. Obviously, Brooksbury having that relationship with Brooksbury College for the girls as well as the boys is really really good. That you know, Brooksbury's a fantastic vocational college. It's not just being overly focused on sort of having a DPP setup. It's not overly focused on being reliant on the private schools. You know, having a strong system at Brooksbury, which is a state institution. That's really key, and making sure that county structure as well is really well resourced as well, because my experiences of the county structure in the boys' game sort of about 5-6 years ago. To me suggested there wasn't really a lack of care of that perhaps there is now, and perhaps what there isn't in the women's game. So, you know, as long as we have those good connections across the city, county, and across the border in the West Midlands as well, that'll be really good in developing women's players, not just for the club, but just for women's club rugby in general, and making women's rugby in Leicestershire, Warwickshire, and sort of the wider East Midlands, just in the wider Midlands area itself, really sustainable is really really good to see, and I hope that continues, and you know I hope that expands, and that more clubs can have pathways with the club, maybe more clubs in Leicestershire as well having official connections with the Tigers Women Programme.
So it's now on to our player profile, and well, not reluctantly, because backs are okay too, but we return to the backs, and we're going to highlight Amanda Schwartz, who you may have seen kicking around on social media because she was the Leicester Tigers players featured in the PWR Powered Differently promo image kind of release and an article series that PWR did that we spoke about, I think, in our very first pod, that we really like. So let's give you some details about Amanda Schwartz, and we can all help grow our love and fan base and understanding of this amazing Leicester Tigers women's team. So she is the captain of the Swedish team, and she plays international rugby at both sevens and 15s. But prior to starting rugby, she competed as a skater until the age of 16. She actually qualified for Swedish Nationals 4 years running. However, fractures in her feet meant that she couldn't be as competitive in skating as she would have liked, and she turned to rugby. She turned to rugby because her mother is Swedish rugby legend Anna-Lena, who represented her country at the 2010 World Cup. Amanda Schwartz has previously played for Loughborough Lightning prior to signing with Tigers, and she got her degree from Loughborough University in psychology with criminology. Which is amazing. Those are my stats. Jacob, you've also got some stats on Amanda Schwartz.
Yeah, cool. So obviously, you know, she talked about her figure skating career prior rugby in her interview with Tigers and in the introducing series, which, you know, Tigers did for a lot of the new women's teams, a lot of the new women's players, sorry, who joined over the season. So do check out those series of videos for the players we're talking about. And in that video with Amanda, she talks about her her sort of transition from figure skating into rugby. It was something, you know, she was saying obviously her mum was a Swedish rugby legend, but she kind of, and her mum wanted her to do rugby, but she was very very reluctant to do that, and it wasn't until she had that injury to her foot where she fractured her foot that she actually made her go like, okay, I'm gonna try rugby out. And yeah, so she was at Loughborough Lightning for 3 years. So in that time, she played for the Loughborough Lightning team that played in the Alliance, what was then the Alliance 15s. And then obviously she also played for the university in Bucks during that period as well. And yes, obviously she's gone from figure skating to to rugby. Obviously, that's not necessarily a transferable skill. It doesn't look as if it is a transferable skill on paper. But when you go further into it, obviously, it's having the sort of the discipline. That's what Amanda was talking a lot about in the introducing video, and how that can help you as a rugby player. Obviously, you know, she's got really good balance on her feet. So, you know, she's able to sort of like, you know, swerve tackles and have good footwork and be strong on both feet as well, which is really, really good. And that's obviously, that comes from her, you know, her very high level experience in figure skating. And yeah, like dancing and rugby can mix. Obviously, we've seen over the years some retired rugby players have had a dabble at Strictly, obviously most famously Austin Healey back in the day. And it's something that I've done, or I used to do a bit of musical theatre alongside playing rugby union, which I did, you know, admittedly get the mick taken out for, which I probably did deserve, to be fair. But it meant that you know, it meant that I was fresh for the County Cup, and you know, I always played well when it counted, or I like to think I played well when it counted. So, you know, it wasn't too bad. But I've now, as I've said previously, I don't really play rugby anymore, but I now do swing dance, which is kind of like a load of dances from the 1920s and 1930s. Like Charleston, but the Charleston that we do isn't the Charleston they do on Strictly. It's sort of less 1920s and sort of a bit more of the Charleston that was danced by the African American communities in Harlem, New York, and in sort of and elsewhere in the United States. So when I first started, I got a lot of like really weird glances, because I said that I was a rugby player. But there are transferable skills, including like lifts and, you know, just having fitness and stamina and those kind of things. So I can see, I mean, I've probably gone on too long about my own personal dance experience, but I can see from quickly going back to Amanda that there are a lot of transferable skills between different kinds of sport. So the fact that Amanda has done so well from transferring from figure skating to a team sport like rugby union, and done so well, not just in the 15s game, but also the 7s game as well, is really testament to her ability as an athlete, and yeah, it kind of proves that you can make sort of really seemingly sort of not usual sporting changes. It's not like, oh, she changed from football to rugby, or, you know, a different team sport to another team sport. But there's definitely a lot in just being a good disciplined and a very high level athlete in general, and that allows you to change from, to adapt from a sport like figure skating into a sport like rugby union. But yes, that's kind of quite exciting there, that we've got like our own sort of dancer of a fullback. But I think what we also want to focus on this player profile is talking a little bit about the Swedish women's rugby team, because they are quite an interesting team, and it's not a, you know, Sweden is not a nation traditionally known for its rugby, but sort of when international women's rugby sort of kicked off sort of 30, nearly 40 years ago, Sweden was one of the progenitors of the international women's game, and we're just going to go into that a bit more detail. So Jess, what is the story of Swedish women's rugby, basically?
Yeah, so I did some digging. There's not much information that's easy to find, so I did kind of lean to Wikipedia on some stuff, but then they provided me some helpful links and references to leap off. So according to Wikipedia, they played their first fixture in 1984 against the Netherlands. However, in more recent history, in 2022, they won the European Trophy, which is Europe's kind of second level, second tier of 15-a-side tournament rugby. They beat Switzerland 48-0, and Amanda Schwartz actually played in that game. She started at fullback. As I said previously, it's not easy to find details around kind of, even details around like current setup. But in early 2023, Tamara Taylor, who obviously is kind of England legend, Tamara Taylor took over from Claire Cruikshank, who was mentioned on last week's pod. She took over as head coach. The pair had previously worked together in previous seasons with Claire Cruikshank as head coach and Tamara as assistant. And actually, just a small shout out to Claire, because it was announced this week that she is the head coach of Edinburgh Rugby's first ever women's rugby team. Obviously, building off the massive success she's had at University of Edinburgh. So it's nice that this week is kind of a Swedish and a Scot link following on from last week's pod coming together. But I think it's really, really exciting. And I think shows an area where British female coaching talent has been nurtured and supported overseas in what we may deem as like, you know, a lower tier team, but actually a really, really competitive team that is producing talent, as we can see that Amanda Schwartz is playing in the PWR, the best domestic women's league in the world. So it's really nice to see and find out about places and teams, countries, locations where British female coaching talent is being nurtured and supported. And then obviously there's an amazing transition with Claire now taking over as first ever Edinburgh women's rugby team coach, which is exciting. But yeah, that's kind of my stats. Jacob, what have you got? Because you've also done some digging.
Yeah, cheers to that, Jess. I mean, so Amanda is not the only isn't the only Swedish player our club. Obviously, Katie Childs, who was playing inside centre last weekend against Ealing Trailfinders, she's also a capped Swedish international, and you know she was interviewed by the Rolling Mall last season. So that was a really good interview actually. So if you can dig that out from sort of I think it was like midway through last season, you know, do check that out if you can. But yeah, so as Jess says, in 2022 they won the European Trophy, which meant that in 2023 they were in sort of the Women's Rugby Europe Championship, which is kind of like the level below the Six Nations. That's the tournament that Spain compete in. Obviously, the Spanish women's side were in the Women's Six Nations from 2000 to 2006, 2007, I believe. Before they were swapped quite controversially with the Italian side. So they were in the 2023 Rugby Europe sort of championship, which consists of three teams. That was Spain, the Netherlands, and obviously Sweden themselves. And because unfortunately they only finished third, or they finished last in that tournament, that meant that they weren't eligible to play for WXV3. Accolade went to Spain. So although Swedish are now currently 19th in World Rugby ranking, so they're ranking higher than Kazakhstan, who played in WXV3, they weren't able to qualify for the first iteration, but I think they should be in a good chance of qualifying for the next iteration, or they're definitely sort of in that region. So yeah, as we sort of mentioned earlier, they played in the 2010 World Cup, and they also qualified for the first three World Cups, so the one in 1991, 94, and 98. But they haven't played in a World Cup since 2010. But as because we focused to give you a little bit of an insight on Swedish rugby, in general, because we've got Amanda and Katie Charles as well. This is just highlighting as well as look as finding out that Tamara Taylor is now the Swedish head coach, as to how we're trying to grow the game in what is seen as traditionally non-rugby areas of Europe. And obviously, you know, the Netherlands, Sweden lost out to the Netherlands last season in Rugby Europe. The Netherlands, that seems to be a growing hotbed of rugby. Apparently, the Men's World Cup that's just gone was really, really popular with Dutch attendees. Apparently, they were the second highest people who actually went to the stands in the tournament, journeying down from the Low Countries. So, you know, we're seeing rugby develop in places like the Netherlands, in Spain, Portugal, in Sweden, in both the men's and the women's game, which is really, really interesting to see. And yeah, hopefully that, you know, because I think basically what happened is that after the 2010 World Cup, there was a bit of a hiatus. I think the team hadn't played for like a 6 year period from like sort of 2013 to around 2019. So the fact that Swedish women's rugby is hopefully on the on the route back up to being really, really competitive, and you know, hopefully it won't be long before they're back in the Women's World Cups in not the too distant future, with hopefully our very own Amanda Swartz, if she isn't the captain, being sort of part of that leadership group in that as well. So yeah, I mean, obviously Amanda was part of that really, really cool Premiership Women's Rugby promo before the start of the season. She's been playing quite a lot. She's been playing at fullback. She's also capable of playing on the wing. It'll be interesting to see whether if she stays at fullback or she does move, or if she does even move to the wing at some point, because obviously Tess Fury can play fullback. Obviously Kaz Colley can play fullback. So we've got good competition in that area as well. So that'll be interesting to see as the season progresses as to whether she will be remain our first choice fullback or we might see a move to the wing. Hope you enjoyed the player profile, and yeah, on to our next section of the pod.
So we're building up now to a big home fixture, because this weekend on Saturday, kicking off at 3 p.m. at Matty Hollywood's Welford Road, we face table toppers Saracens. They have got 3 wins from 3, and we know they are a formidable women's side. So how we contextualize this, how we frame this as fans, supporters, is really, really key, because they are loaded with talent. So I'll run you through the talent. I'll run you through kind of the Red Roses, familiar names that will stick out. Obviously, we have got Marley Packer, fresh off from women, the Women's 15s Player of the Year award that was awarded at the end of the WXV1 competition. We've also got Jess Breach, Leanne Infante, Poppy Cleo, Rosie Callahan, and Zoe Harrison making up some of their squad. Now, I think a bit of framing from this is what kind of side they may send, which, Jacob, I noticed you mentioned to me before we clicked record, which we've kind of come to, but to add some context, Saracens' game after this, I think, is Bristol, and it'll be a home game for Saracens. Now, that's a big fixture for them, because it's first versus third on the table, because Bristol Bears are currently in third, with Exeter at second. This is the last game for Leicester Tigers Women's before we have a kind of nice little league pause and reset. It's a kind of an opportunity after this game to reflect, opportunity for the team, because we were due to play Worcester. Obviously, that is now a bye week, and there's then a Christmas break. So the next time that Leicester Tigers will play will be the weekend, Saturday/Sunday, 6th, 7th of Jan, when we're at home again playing Quins. So after this game, there's a nice, I think, 1 to 2 week little pause opportunity coming up for the team, where we can almost like hit a reset button on our league, and we can reflect on all of the amazing progress we've made so far, because we have made amazing progress. But before we come to that and the progress we've made so far, Jacob, what are you feeling? Because this is formidable, but this is one of the exciting things about having a team in the PWR, is that you get to see Marley Packer come and play at Matty Hollywood's Welford Road. That's amazing. And the fact that you can go and sit in and you can walk, you know, round the corner, let's say, and see Marley Packer play at home, I think is amazing, and represents the opportunity for fans now that Tigers have a PWR team.
Yeah, absolutely. you know, Marley Packer has obviously appeared at Matty Hollywood's Welford Road before, when England played Ireland in the 2022 Six Nations, and she scored a really good try. So yeah, so the opportunities to have players like Marley Packer, like Poppy Cleal, like Zoe Harrison, Jess Breach, all these amazing Red Roses that Saracens have, there is a really good opportunity to go see them at Matty Hollywood's Welford Road regularly in the PWR as well. So I think we can recognise that sort of advantage as well to going down to to Matt Taylor Woods Welford Road this weekend. And yeah, I mean, obviously, we don't know what kind of team Saracens will send. I have a suspicion it won't be that heavily rotated, because they'll probably, you know, the season's still quite fresh. They're probably going to trust their squad to get a good result this weekend. But you know, I think we definitely we should. I think that the key is for this weekend is to not get too overdaunted by the opposition and by the occasion. I think, you know, we've discussed this last week about how maybe in both double headers we were potentially overawed by the situation and how that might have led to the slow start. I think what's key for this weekend is kind of just making sure that we're just regarding Saracens as just another rugby team. I think it's very easy to look at them and maybe hold them in a mythical regard. I mean, you know, they're deserved league leaders and they've got an incredible squad and they've got incredible players in that team as well. You know, as I say, as you said, Marley Packer is World Rugby Females 15 Player of the Year, and for good reason. She's one of the best players that England have ever had, and she's certainly one of the best players I've ever seen in both sides of the game playing currently. So, you know, yes, it's daunting, but we've just got to remember we are just playing another rugby team, that and they're human. They're susceptible to mistakes. They're susceptible to being almost, you could almost see happening what kind of happened this weekend in the Investec Champions Cup in the men, where sort of Tigers rocked up, seeing the team sheet, seeing that Stormers had sort of sent the kids, and thought, oh yeah, we're going to walk this. And actually, we had a bit of a bit of a scare. I mean, we did end up with a 5-point win, but you can almost see that happening to on the reverse this weekend. Saracens could go like, oh, you know, Leicester haven't won a game all season. They're not really clicking. We only, you know, we're going to prioritize that Bristol fixture, and you know, maybe send a bit of a rotated side. Knowing Saracens, they're not going to do that. You know, let's be honest, both the men's and the women's teams are very, very good on that sort of mental front of treating of playing the same sort of rugby against any kind of rugby team. But you know, I don't think it's outside the realms of possibility. And I think we've just got to make sure that we're not sort of, we've just got to make sure that mentally we're not overawed by the sense of the occasion, and be like, okay, we are playing against the league leaders. This is a great opportunity. We're hosting really class Red Rose players at Matt Taylor Woods Welford Road. And, you know, it's just another game. It's another opportunity to continue building on the positives. You know, build on our mauling game, which is starting to click, making sure our defensive cohesion is building, because against Saracens, you're going to be defensively tested. But yeah, I think it's just sort of it's just making sure we focus on those kind of things. And, you know, result doesn't really matter this weekend, but I think if I saw the result, I saw the highlights, I saw the match report, and I read, you know, that we didn't have a slow start, and that it was kind of a more of a case of that Saracens had to pull away in the last sort of 10, 20 minutes, I think I'd be pretty happy with that, because it meant that we addressed the fact that we are having the slow start. So I think for me, trying to fix that than getting any kind of result this weekend against the very top level Saracens side is more the priority. I don't know what you think about that, Jess.
Yeah, I've like put on the coaching hat for like 5 minutes. And this wouldn't necessarily be the way that I would frame this for a team I was coaching. I'd weigh it more on the positive side. And I do like maybe one improvement, but just for you guys to come up with 5 bullet points, I've come up with 2 positives so far that we've seen over the season, these first initial few games for us in the PWR. And then I've come up with 3 improvements that I'd like to see at Sarries, and then after the Christmas break, and to see us really push on and continue the momentum. Because, okay, if you look at our scorelines, you'd go, God, Aren't tigers doing poo? But reality is, no, they are not. They have made so many improvements, and it's important for us as fans, for the players, for the coaches, for the club staff, for everyone involved to take stock of the amazing improvements we've made so far, because we have made real improvements. So the two positives from me is our pace and play and attack. That has consistently been really exciting. And it's always provided or has the opportunity to provide something out of nothing and spark up a team, which is really good. And our line out, which started a little bit iffy, a little bit shaky, has been shored up and has definitely improved. The fact that we've seen tries coming from our line out, whereas at the first game against Exeter, we leaked tries off losing a line out. So that's a really quick turnaround that's happened for us. That's been pleasing. Our three improvements that I would like to see at Sarri's after Christmas break for the next few games, I would like to see when we've spoken about scrums and I've spoken about being able to take that initial pressure without losing that body shape, without dipping our hips down and losing that flat back, that kind of tabletop, I call it. I'd like to see our scrums improve just on being able to take that initial pressure just a little bit. Obviously, that's going to take work with the props, but if we shore it up now, maybe with some work on our locks, giving it a little bit of an extra shove, I'd like to see some improvement in scrums. Yes, I would also like to see an earlier switch on for us because we have got that pace and play in attack and we can spark things from nothing. So the earlier we switch on, the more likely we are to take opportunities and create opportunities for ourselves from that. And I would like, now we've spoken about how we have been able to reform our defensive line, I'd like us to work on our defensive line to have, less susceptible to that biting in. But those are things that are going to take time. That's not going to be instantly fixed at Sarri's at the weekend. That's going to take the next three or four games for us to really push on and take those improvements and put them into place. So it is really exciting that we get to see those Saracens players come down to Mattioli Woods Welford Road this weekend. And we can help play a part as a crowd by really cheering the girls on and help ensure that the focus just isn't on this one game. This one game is massive. Yes, you get to see Marley Packer potentially play at Mattioli Woods Welford Road. That's amazing. You get to cheer on the girls in the PWR League. It's important to also add some context. So these next few games that we're playing are a real opportunity for us to push on and to put these to focus on those two positive, to maybe put those three improvements in place that I'd like to see. This Saracens game, it's not the be all and end all. The scoreline may go against us. It may not. It's, every game while we're building and gaining momentum is a one-off game that makes it exciting. But it's also within the wider context of this team's improvement and first ever league season in the PWR. It's also just one puzzle piece as part of a wider fixture that is just not, it's not just the games that they play week in, week out. It's also the puzzle pieces of the pathways and all of the work we've spoken about this week all gets brought in into play. So there's a ton of context. It's not just, it's Saracens, wow, aren't they amazing coming to play at Mattioli Woods Welford Road this weekend? But it's part of a wider picture. What's your thoughts, Jacob? Because I've probably excitedly rambled for a bit there about this game and wider context and where it all fits in and why it's so exciting and the stars that are coming down. What are you thinking about what I've just kind of spewed verbally?
No, that was all really good. I mean, obviously, I really agree about the positives and the improvements of where we are at the moment. And I think those improvements are sort of, they are obtainable goals in the short term. This isn't about work that we can do in the off season after the end of this season. I think it's in the meantime, it is attainable. And we've got to focus on that. And we've got to be able to focus on that sort of regardless of the opposition. I mean, you've got to cater and train for how each team plays per week. But at the end of the day, like I was saying earlier, you can't just sort of be too overawed by the fact we're placing this sort of this amazing Saracens team. They are defeatable. They're not, this, even Goliath was defeated by David. This is not a predetermined result at the weekend by any means. So I think that the girls have got to remember that there might be some freedom in that as well, which allows them to sort of play a bit more heads up rugby, you know, who knows? But yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, please do get yourself down there to Matilda Woods, Welford Road, if you can. It's Saturday 3 p.m. So, you know, get yourselves down there, cheer on the girls, you know, and play your part in forging a fortress mentality at Mattielli Woods, Welford Road. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen? You know, we've got to be realistic, but that also means that we can't just be like, oh, we're going to lose because it's Saracens and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We've got to support the girls. We've got to remember that it's just another rugby game against just another rugby team. And that regardless of what happens in terms of result, we're still building towards the future. We're still building towards a place where teams will fear Leicester Tigers women like they currently fear Saracens women. And, you know, I definitely think that we're on the path to that. So, you know, yeah, please do get yourselves down there if you can. And yeah, unfortunately the game isn't being shown on TNT Sports this weekend. That privilege is being shown to Exeter Chiefs again. But, you know, as I said, it is a home game. So please do get yourselves down there if you can. Now, we haven't done Top Tiger Time this week because obviously it was an away fixture. Highlights took a while to be released. It was only sort of one try. So that kind of feature was hard to do. But, you know, please do fill in your Top Tiger Time features if you can. And, yeah, and enjoy the game regardless of the result, and go on the girls.
That is it. This is the end of this week's episode. More scrum stuff returns soon because I'm aware that this week has been scrum dominated, and I will not apologise for that. But it's just to say that just like Tigers are on a bye week next week, so are we. So we're taking a break until after Christmas. We'll be back after Christmas to review the Saris game and to get excited for Harlequins at home, Harlequins at Mattielli Woods, Welford Road. It's going to be amazing. We hope very much so that you enjoy this holiday period, this Christmas period, however you're spending it, whoever you're spending it with. I get very, very, very overexcited for Christmas. I love it. I really am so, so excited. We got my nieces coming up for Christmas. One's 7, one's 3. Shout out to Elise and Clara because I'm so, so, so excited to have them here. I generally get overexcited for Christmas anyway. So then you add kids that are excited for Christmas and I'm hyper. I've had too much coffee while we're recording this pod. I'm very, very excited. But I want to wish you a very, very, very Merry Christmas. Happy holiday, wherever you're listening, whoever you are. It's been an amazing first part of a season for Leicester Tigers women's team in this PWR. And we're going to be so excited to kind of bring you the Saracens game and to get excited for Harlequins when we join you after Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Jess. I mean, I'll repeat that as well. Like, Merry Christmas, everyone, and we'll be back after the festive season to review this game and preview that very, very exciting home game against Quins. But yeah, enjoy the game this weekend if you can get down. Please, please, please do go if you can. You know, fill in your top Tiger times. You know, leave us a rating on Spotify, or, you know, give us a like on any of your podcast providers. Do keep interacting with us on our Twitter at the LTW Fancast. And, you know, if you do want to send in over more, please do send us an email over at ltwfancast@gmail.com. But yeah, have a safe Christmas, everyone, and we'll see you soon.